This week, a wide-ranging economic chat with the president of the nation's most influential women's group.
The women always end up being the second-class citizens in the job market.
Sequestration, austerity cuts, and looking for women leaders. I'm Susan Barnett, and this is 51% The Women's Perspective. Political pundits say the austerity cuts that kicked in April are likely to be permanent, with just a few band-aid fixes like the quick congressional response to outrage over flight delays after cuts to the FAA. Meals on Wheels, Head Start, unemployment, food safety, they're all facing similar cuts. Terry O'Neill, the president of the National Organization for Women, NOW, argues many of those cuts target women and families, and she warns that cuts without job stimulation is a recipe for disaster. Terry, let's talk about the impact of the huge budget cuts that are being put into place, because it looks at this point like they are going to stick.
Yeah, they really are sort of step by step by step going to be harsher and harsher, frankly, on women. You know, what's most upsetting about this whole sequestration thing is that Paul Ryan, an extremist, he really is an extreme right-wing thinker on economic issues, has long wanted to decimate the very programs that disproportionately serve women, after-school programs, Head Start, training programs for occupations that are not traditional for women, assistance to go to college. And by the way, it's far more important economically for a woman to get either a 2-year or a 4-year college degree than a man, because her earning capacity is very much dependent on that degree, unlike men. So all of these programs that help women either stay in the middle class and avoid falling into poverty, or to come out of poverty and get into the middle class, those are the programs that right-wingers like Paul Ryan and Eric Cantor and the Republican leadership really want to cut. Those programs are being cut right across the board by sequestration. And something that people, I think, don't focus on enough is that those are the same programs that very disproportionately employ women, right, as teachers, as nurses, as healthcare providers, as social workers, and case managers. So as we cut these programs, we are going to be laying off very disproportionately women. So it's a double whammy against women.
Whenever you raise objections to cuts, the first thing people will say is, then what would you do instead? Do you have any ideas?
Absolutely. There's an easy way to go, and all we need is the political will to stare down the non-evidence-based ideological people who say we have to cut, now. That's just wrong. What's actually correct is, if we were to engage in an aggressive, massive jobs program, Representative Jan Schakowsky from Illinois has made a proposal that is excellent. Representative John Conyers from Michigan has made another proposal that is excellent. It would involve direct job creation by the federal government, not tax incentives in the kind of sort of hope that maybe some private business would use the tax incentive to hire people, actual job creation. One of the things that feminist economists suggested be done, and which was in President Obama's budget last Congress, but is not there now, was, for example, a $200 million cash transfer to states and local governments for the specific purpose of hiring back the teachers that were laid off as states cut back because they felt they faced these budget crises because of Wall Street's cratering of our economy in 2008. So what we need is a jobs program. If you have a jobs program, you will have employed people. Employed people pay taxes. They pay income taxes into federal and state treasuries. They pay payroll taxes into the Social Security system and into the Medicare system. Employed people also start buying things again. If employed people, if we got unemployment down from where it is now, between 7 and 8%, and got it down to, say, between right around 4%, maybe between 4 and 4.5%, you would see governments being able to provide the basic services that are currently being squeezed. So a massive jobs program coupled with, once we get the economy going again, then you can take austerity measures, but not in the form of social program cuts. Instead, those measures have to be in the form of increased taxes on the very wealthiest. The wealthiest have been sucking off the increases in gross domestic product for 30 years. It's time for them to start paying their fair share. And so if we had a progressive, sensible tax policy that required the wealthiest to pay their fair share, we would really all be better off.
And if you look at the international headlines, you can see what austerity cuts are resulting in other countries.
In fact, it's failing. As governments cut back their services in a time when the private sector simply is not hiring, then everybody cuts back their spending. In a community, if I stop spending on your products that you're selling, you don't sell. You can, and then if you're not selling products, you cut back your spending on things that our neighbor Nancy might sell, right? So everybody's sales go down. That means everybody's income goes down. It's like a downward spiral. That's what austerity does when you've been hit with the kind of deep recession, near depression, that both Europe and the United States are facing. And the only way to get out of it is for government to step in and do a massive jobs program, gin up economic activity again. Once economic activity is going full guns, then the government can pull back. That's the time for the government to pull back and start getting its deficit under control and so forth. But doing, you know, trying to balance the budget now is wrongheaded. And, you know, I think one of the things we need to be careful about when we're talking about government deficits and balancing the budget, and it's something that's happening in Ohio right now. John Kasich, a couple of years ago, he's the governor of Ohio, was facing a budget deficit of, I believe, about $8 billion. He slashed spending on schools and other social programs and other things as well. Today, the Ohio state budget is not only balanced, it is facing a surplus. And what is Mr. Kasich doing with that surplus? He is not putting the money back into the schools so that teachers can have teachers' aid. Teachers will not be faced with 40 children in the classroom with just one adult to try to teach them. Instead, John Kasich is taking that money and siphoning it up for the wealthiest in his state. He wants to provide yet another tax break for wealthy people in Ohio. So one of the things we have to be careful about, it's good to have a sensible conversation about balanced budgets, but let's be a little skeptical of ideologues whose real motive here is to redistribute the country's gross domestic product, redistribute wealth away from middle-class families and up to the wealthiest.
Terry, there are a number of reports showing that the divide between the rich and the rest of us is growing wider in this country and that the middle class is disappearing. And there are other studies that indicate that women suffer the most from that gap.
It's really a problem. I have a few factoids that I think really should just raise the hairs on the back of our neck. So in the 1990s, in the early 1990s, the Securities and Exchange Commission was becoming concerned about the growing ratio between CEO pay and the pay of ordinary workers, and median pay for workers that were not in management. At that time, the ratio was 30. So CEOs were being paid about 30 times what their ordinary workers were being paid. And the SEC was frankly concerned about it from a competitive point of view, because in Japan and Germany, those ratios were much lower. In Japan, it was more like 10 or 12. In Germany, it was about 15. Well, what happened was the rest of the world began to look more like the United States until 2010. There was a report released. The ratio today of CEO salaries to ordinary worker salaries in 2010 was 364. CEOs are being paid 364 times what their ordinary workers are paid. And I haven't seen the most recent study. I don't know if it's out yet, but somebody told me that it's even worse. It's closer to 400 times. that is absolutely why the middle class is being squeezed. Now, you put that statistic together with the fact that roughly two-thirds of minimum wage workers in the United States are women, and you can really see how this dramatic wage inequality is very much harming women as a class. We live in a country where workplaces are severely sex segregated. Walk into any hotel in the United States, and look at who's parking the cars, and look at who's making the beds. It is that way in factories. It's that way in offices. It's that way across the board. Over the past 30 years, the federal courts have become increasingly hostile to enforcement of non-discrimination laws that we have, both for race and for sex. And as a result, we have this severe sex segregation in the workplace. And once you have segregation, you've got first-class citizens and second-class citizens, and the women always end up being the second-class citizens in the job market. So you have pressure on middle-class wages, outlandish sort of sucking off, as I said, of increased productivity is all going to the top 0.01% of income earners in this country. And the people who become the most vulnerable to any kind of economic dislocation are the women. It's simple to see and it's simple to fix. But we have leaders in this country who are completely out of touch with what ordinary Americans want. Poll after poll after poll shows that people want sensible tax policies so that the rich pay their fair share. The elite decision makers in this country are resistant to that. But that's what the voters actually want. Poll after poll shows that voters by 70% want Roe versus Wade to remain the law of the land. But the decision makers in states and even in the United States Congress are consistently trying to stop women from accessing basic reproductive health care. Not just abortion, but contraception and mammograms and cervical cancer screenings and all the rest. Poll after poll shows that what people want in this country more than anything is jobs. But the elites in our country are so focused on austerity, cutting jobs, laying people off, that they just don't seem to be in touch with the perceptions and understandings of the very people they're supposed to represent.
Coming up, now President Terry O'Neill explains why you ought to be running for office. And we'll take you to a very special New England garden party. If you missed part of this show or want to hear it again, visit the 51% archives at WAMC.org. This week's show is number 1244. We've heard what National Organization for Women President Terry O'Neill has to say about the impacts of austerity measures on the nation's women. She discussed the growing divide between rich and poor, the disappearing middle class, and the fact that women carry a disproportionate share of the load, both through cuts to social programs aimed at helping women and families, and cuts to jobs where women predominate, teaching and social services. As we continued our conversation, O'Neill talked about grooming a new group of women leaders and encouraging more women to get involved.
Women leaders face real obstacles today, but I think that the 2010 elections were a real wake-up call to the women's rights community. What I mean by that is that in 2010, for the first time in 30-something years, the number of women in the United States Congress actually went down. It hadn't happened for 30 years. Kirsten Gillibrand stepped up with a project called Off the Sidelines, and her goal with this organization, she's a senator from New York, is to bring women off the sidelines and into the political process, bring them into participating in our democracy and bringing more women on board. By the way, there were many other things cropping up. I myself am engaged with a number of women leaders on a political parity project to double the number of women in the United States Congress by 2022. So there are many of us that are working on getting more women into leadership. And in fact, in 2012, against all the odds, we elected women Senate candidates so that today we have 20 women in the United States Senate. Now, I have to tell you, my friend Sam Bennett, who is the president of the Women's Campaign Fund, she was appalled. She said, 20? 20? that's lousy. That's not anywhere near 50%. And so we were all celebrating, and then we all said, well, yeah, you're right, Sam, that's kind of true. But it was progress against very stiff odds. One of the things that the women's community, I think, is recognizing is that when women run, women actually win races at roughly the same rate that men do. But it takes an extra effort to convince women to run for office, and it takes an extra effort to convince women to run for office the second time. Men and women very likely to lose the first time out, much more likely to win the second time out. So we know we have our work cut out for us. We know a lot about what we need to do, and we're determined to work on it. The other thing that we've learned from studies that have been done is that there are very specific things for women candidates that can undermine their candidacy. In particular, comments about what they're wearing, comments about women's appearance, just differential treatment between women and men candidates can undermine them. So a number of organizations are absolutely determined to spot sexist and misogynist comments, call it out immediately, not wait for the candidate herself to decide whether, you know, am I going to pick my battles, am I going to pick this insult or that insult. We're the advocates. I think it's our job to call it out, say what it is. It's sexist, it's misogynist, it's got to stop. And I think that can be very helpful.
So if you are a woman who feels like she'd like to run for office, she'd like to get involved, this is something she's interested in, how do you begin?
You know, there are a number of organizations that you can reach out to. Women's Campaign Fund is one. The National Organization for Women is another. The National Women's Political Caucus is another. Contact these organizations. There are trainings that are run both in educational institutions and at a local level by NOW chapters, by caucus chapters. There are a number of ways to begin gathering information about what's involved in running for office. And then once you decide that you want to do that, obviously the first thing is to become engaged in campaigns. You need to see up close what a campaign looks like. The reality is, campaigning for office is not nearly as scary or arduous as I think a lot of women believe it is. I myself did not get engaged in political activism until I was near 40. It was a wonderful experience. What they told me was, okay, you live in this neighborhood in New Orleans. I was actually on the Tulane Law faculty at the time. And they said, hey, we want you to go to your neighbors. Just go to your neighbors. Here's your talking points. Here's your information about the two candidates. Talk to them about why you're supporting David Duke's opponent, Edwin Edwards, and why you need to get them out to vote. And I found very overwhelmingly my neighbors thanked me for being involved. They thanked me for doing what I was doing. They were gracious and kind, and I got to know people in my own neighborhood that I wouldn't have known otherwise. Losing elections is not such a terrible thing. You get to know people. You might run again and win the next time. You've made a contribution of your own thoughts and ideas, and people really do appreciate it.
I have the sense that perhaps there is more time for mature women, women who are well into their careers or whose children have grown, and this is an opportunity for them to pursue public service.
Absolutely. And you know, one of the most unfortunate aspects of the economic collapse is this phenomenon of long-term unemployment, and it has really hit men as well as women over the age of 55 very hard. It's scary. But on the other hand, more women who have their kids are grown, they have some time, maybe they're working part-time, maybe they'd prefer to be working full-time, but they are working part-time, they have time to go and get involved. You know who else has time to get involved? And again, this is not such a great, the reason for it is very bad, it's the long-term unemployment, is younger people. Young women coming out of college who are finding a very hard time getting employment, there are opportunities for volunteering in their community, becoming active in their community, that can strengthen their ties and give them a view of the world, I think, that is very, very important. And I think it would give them an optimistic sense that actually change is possible. Actually, if you show up to the meetings, if you go and call your neighbors, if you talk to people, go canvas door to door and talk to people about something you believe in, that is an extraordinary training ground for making a contribution throughout the rest of your career.
Terry O'Neill is the president of NOW, the National Organization for Women. Now, let's mix a little high society and springtime planting. If you're anywhere near Northwest Connecticut and you love to garden, there's an event coming up that you'll find hard to resist. Interior designer Bunny Williams and her gardening pal Naomi Blumenthal started Trade Secrets 11 years ago. It's now known as the Garden Party Event of the Year. It's much more than a plant sale, and it's become an annual event that draws the likes of Martha Stewart. It's a chance to rub elbows with the rich and famous and help a worthy cause at the same time. It's done for the benefit of Women's Support Services, known as WES.
Naomi was on the board of WES, which 11 years ago was really almost a hotline of concerned people who would help families in need, particularly women if they were in abusive relationships or had problem children. And because of Trade Secrets, it's grown so much. They now have a building, and they offer counseling. They offer psychiatric counseling, getting people to the right place, and also can connect them with lawyers if they need be. So it's really a service organization that started out primarily to help women in difficult situations. It's grown and helps men, too.
So I have never been, but since Martha Stewart recommends this, I picture the garden version of a Saratoga polo match. Ladies in lovely dresses and gentlemen in seersucker suits and great big hats, all of them wandering around looking at flowers and plants.
Well, picture people in blue jeans, rubber boots, coats, scarves, very serious, not glamorous. They don't even want to talk to each other because they're cruising for so they don't miss the Tiarella dealer or the peony dealer or whatever. It's early in the morning at 8 o'clock in the morning. It's rather cutthroat because nobody wants to talk to anybody. They just want to rush to their favorite nursery or, pick up their favorite antique. And it's very casual because it's outside and, you never know what the weather's going to be. We've had snow, we've had rain, we've had, you know, over 11 years, we've had every weather condition. So it's pretty much a serious endeavor. It's a country version of the Chelsea Flower Show in a way. I mean, it's the outside of it. I mean, there are people buying plants and, you know, buying terracotta pots and garden benches and statuary, but it's very, very, it's pretty casual.
And over the years, have you seen a difference in the kind of plants that people are battling over at this event?
Well, I think people are, gardening is changing. There are more grasses, there's more wildflowers, people want wonderful shrubs that they don't have to take care of as much as they would a perennial border. I think people love the idea of a more natural garden. So, there's one dealer that just sells Tiarellas. Well, you know, everybody rushes to them because they're wonderful in a woodland space. I think people are, they're realizing the difficulty of maintaining gardens and the expense and having a hard time finding gardens and gardeners. So they still want a garden, but they want to do it maybe in a little bit more natural way.
Bunny Williams is an interior designer and founder of Trade Secrets, a charity plant and garden sale that's coming up the weekend of May 18th in Sharon, Connecticut. Find out more at TradeSecretsCT.com. That's our show for this week. Thanks to Katie Britton for production assistance. Our theme music is by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. If you'd like to hear this show again or visit the 51% archives, go to our website at wamc.org. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back next week with another edition of 51%, The Women's Perspective.